On This Week in Enterprise Tech, we have Mr. Curtis Franklin and Mr. Brian Chi here today. Now, there are always new toolkits attempting to solve today's security challenges. Now, there's a new one out there called New Application Security Toolkit that actually uncovered something called dependency confusion attacks. Pretty interesting one. We'll get into just what that is. Plus, we have a really great guest, Mike Fong. He's the founder and CEO of Provoro, which is a company actually pioneering first-of-their-kind mobile security hardware protections. Really some interesting stuff there. We'll go into a deep dive into what today's mobile risks are and what organizations should really be focusing on. You definitely shouldn't miss it. Twiat on the set.
Podcasts you love
from people you trust.
This is Twiat.
This is Twiat, This Week in Enterprise Tech, episode 469, recorded November 12th, 2021. Mobile insecurity. This episode of This Week in Enterprise Tech is brought to you by PlexTrack, the powerful yet simple security management platform that helps you to get the real cybersecurity work done. With PlexTrack, you'll streamline your assessments, analytics, and reporting. Visit PlexTrack.com/twit and claim your free month. And by Nareva. Nareva is revolutionizing audio for meeting and learning spaces by making it possible to get full room microphone coverage in medium to large spaces without the cost and complexity of multi-component pro AV solutions. That's a revolution. Learn more at Nareva.com/twit. And by Bitwarden. Get the password manager that offers a robust and cost-effective solution that can drastically increase your chances of staying safe online. Get started with a free trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan, or get started for free across all devices as an individual user at bitwarden.com/twit. Welcome to Twiat, This Week in Enterprise Tech, the show that is dedicated to you, the enterprise professional, the IT pro, and that geek who just wants to know how this world is connected. I'm your host, Louis Maresca, your guide through the big world of the enterprise. But I can't guide you by myself. I need to bring in the professionals, the experts in their fields, starting with our very own Mr. Brian Chi, net architect at Sky Fiber and all-around tech geek. He's always implementing something. But Chibert, you've spent a while working on an exciting event that's coming up. That's right.
Yes, actually, tomorrow and Sunday is the Orlando Maker Faire. It is, I think, the second largest Maker Faire in the United States, second only to the New York one. But yeah, we're going to have all kinds of stuff. You know, if you want, you can try out the human hamster wheel that's powering the shaved ice machine or Robot Ruckus. I've been working on getting the wireless running for the different places and so forth. And oh, by the way, a new toy just came in. Oh, I'm going to be building. If you've ever seen those live packs that the TV stations run around, they're called U-Lives.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, they cost a king's ransom and they can bond together 3, 4, 5, or 6 LTE devices. And those are the special ones. You have to pre-provision them from the carrier. Otherwise, you can't bond consecutive channels. Well, this one will allow us to bond multiple channels across different carriers. So I can actually bond, you know, a couple of 2 or 3 different LTE modems or 5G modems along with Wi-Fi and shoot it out the Ethernet. So I'm looking forward to being able to stream even in some places with sketchy reception.
Ooh, excited to hear what you guys take away from that show. Thanks, Chibert, for being here. Well, we also have to welcome back our very own, the man who has the pulse on the enterprise and IT security. He's Mr. Curtis Franklin, senior analyst at Omdia. Curtis, I hear you've had some major involvement in this week's event as well.
Yes, I've been out at the fairgrounds myself, getting ready for Maker Faire. I'm going to be there in a couple of guises. I'm going to be working in the booth for Maker Effects. That's the foundation that produces Maker Faire and also has the Maker Space that we belong to. I'm also going to be working with the Orlando chapter of Urban Sketchers, which is a group with over 370 chapters around the world, people who document events in their communities by going out with a sketch pad, pencil, pen, watercolors, kicking it old school when it comes to making a graphical record of what's happening. So lots of fun. The weather should be good. And I think it's going to be a grand weekend to get geeky.
Fantastic. Looking forward to what you guys come back with, because I need some new projects on my side as well. So definitely pass them my way. Well, folks, I'm also looking forward to not only Maker Faire, but also today's show, because we have some really interesting topics to get into. Now, there are always new toolkits or services that are attempting to solve today's security challenges in order to stay ahead of the curve. Now, that's the key call here, ahead of the curve. Now, there's a new application security toolkit that's actually uncovered something called dependency confusion attacks. Now, we'll get into just what those attacks are and how you can actually protect yourself from them. Plus, we have a really great guest today, Mike Fahn. He's the CEO and founder of Prevaro, which is actually a company pioneering first-of-its-kind mobile security hardware protections. And we're going to go deep dive into a discussion about today's mobile risks and what organizations should really be focusing on. So stick around. We have lots to talk about here. But first, before we get into all that exciting topics, we have to take you through this week's exciting news blips. According to a recent research by Cambridge University, there are two vulnerabilities that impact most compilers. That's right, compilers. These sorts of vulnerabilities have an impact on software supply chains. For example, if an attacker successfully commits code injection by deceiving human reviewers, future software is likely to inherit that vulnerability. Now, let's take a look at some of these techniques that go along with this. Extended strings, which make sections of string literals seem as code, having the same impact as comments and causing string comparison to actually fail. There's also comment out, which forces a comment to appear as code, which is then ignored. And then there's early returns, which actually bypass a function by returning a return statement that seems to be inside a comment. Now, what happens next? Well, the compilers support this unique code that you do not see when compiling your application. They interpret it, creating a compiled application different from the one you actually see in your IDE, which is very bad. Now, you may be asking, what should I do here? What can happen? How can I make this better? Well, interpreters like Unicode-aware compilers and compiler pipelines must provide warnings or errors for unterminated bidirectional control characters in string literals or comments, as well as identifiers containing misleading mixed scripting characters. Now, there's also unterminated bidirectional string literals and comments, as well as mixed script confused characters and bidirectional control characters. Now, the interesting thing here is there are mechanisms to help you out, like special linters and post code scanners. Now, if you already have code that's deployed, GitHub now has a function to scan this code for these types of vulnerabilities. However, in the end, the vulnerability is about injection of hidden characters in your source code. Your team could also write a tool to check if in their source code there's any file that contains something hidden. Now, there are also extensions as well. Like, for instance, on VS Code, there's a cool extension called Gremlin Tracker that can actually help you with this effort as well. Now, do yourself a favor. Go check if you've left any juicy code out for hackers to eat up after midnight, or you just might have gremlins lurking in your production code.
Well, Cher once asked what would happen if she could turn back time. Now a researcher has asked, what if hackers could turn back time, turn forward time, or just turn it in all sorts of directions? At Black Hat Europe, renowned hardware hacker Adam Laurie demonstrated an unnervingly simple way to alter time on a clock. Laurie built his own simulated time signal system using an open source tool called TX Tempus, which simulates signals for syncing the time on clocks and watches, and ran it on a Raspberry Pi outfitted with an RFID antenna, all to take advantage of what he calls a fragile ecosystem. Now, Laurie didn't just do the normal thing of sending a bad message using NTP. His device overrode the UK region's official low-frequency radio broadcast-based clock synchronization signal. In his demo, one clock was set to operate normally, communicating with the NTP that transmits local atomic clock broadcasts to timekeeping devices. Another clock, which was also set to communicate with the National Physical Laboratory, which is the UK atomic clock feed via NTP. And on that one, Laurie commandeered the feed on the link. The hack underscored how easily RFID can be abused and how that potentially could wreak havoc by altering time on a wider scale. And unlike other security issues, this risk to time hacking isn't rooted in software or hardware vulnerabilities. It's more about an aging technology and process. Correct time synchronization, of course, affects wide swaths of society, everything from financial transactions that rely on accurate timing of payments to industrial systems, forensics, and timestamp network packets on the internet. IoT devices rely on the atomic clock for just about everything having to do with synchronizing activity. In his keynote, Laurie cited a 2017 UK report that estimated the cost of time synchronization failure was a stunning 1 billion British pounds per day. Now, ransomware attacks then are an obvious threat here. And he added, if I can take out a financial organization by DOSing their atomic clock feed, that would be a very powerful attack. The security risks of RF long have been eliminated by Laurie and other researchers. Bottom line, RF tends to transmit data in plain text. Ari says the strongest signal wins, and there's no authentication in most of these transmissions. There are technologies for validating signals, but most of the existing RF infrastructure remains insecure.
Well, the U.S. Department of Justice has charged a Ukrainian national for his alleged role in a July 2nd cyber attack on Kaseya that resulted in the Revel ransomware sample being deployed on some 1,500 of the company's downstream customers. Yaroslav Wasinski, 22, was arrested in Poland on October 8th on a U.S. arrest warrant. He is currently awaiting extradition to the U.S., where he faces additional charges related to ransomware attacks against numerous other companies. If convicted on all charges, Wasinski faces a maximum sentence of 115 years in prison. In unsealing the indictment against Wasinski on Monday, the Department of Justice said it also seized $6.1 million in ransom payments that allegedly were received by another Revel operator, Russian national Yazisi Polyanin, 28. The DOJ has charged Polyanin with carrying out ransomware against businesses and government entities in Texas back in August of 2019. Polyanin, who is currently still at large abroad, faces a maximum sentence of 145 years if convicted on all charges. Wasinski is one of five individuals who have been arrested worldwide since February 2021 for allegedly deploying Revel, a.k.a. Sodin Kobi, Kibi, on systems belonging to organizations in multiple countries, including the U.S., Germany, and France. Two were arrested on November 4th in Romania. Two were arrested in South Korea. And Wasinski was arrested in October in Poland. It's not clear when the two Revel-related arrests in South Korea happened. Well, these five are believed to have been responsible for deploying Revel on systems belonging to some 5,000 organizations. So while the story says Department of Justice, I got to imagine this was a multi-agency effort along with the international arm of the FBI. So to those guys and gals behind the DOJ curtain, bravo.
While the internet has proven a force for freedom, controlling the flow of online traffic is one of the most powerful methods used by 21st century governments. Now, by blocking or throttling areas of the internet, a nation state can slow or even entirely cut off the spread of information or prevent the use of applications and tools it considers dangerous or threatening to its rule. But for obvious reasons, these governments involved do not advertise their activities, making it hard to actually detect these restrictions. Now, a new multi-institutional study led by University of Chicago will actually build a new AI and data science tools to monitor and detect internet censorship, developed new statistical techniques to identify censorship with greater levels of confidence, and ultimately create a weather map for certain types of nation-state interference and control of online information. Sounds like a hard task. Now, the $1 million grant funded by DARPA brings the together research from the University of Chicago Data Science Institute, Princeton University, and SRI International. The question is, what is the actual goal here? Now, the main One is actually being to increase levels of confidence about what is being censored, when censorship occurs, and where it is being censored. It's also to derive the and provide real-time insights from that actual data. However, that presents a significant data science challenge since the scope and scale of the internet is quite massive. Now, how will they do that? Well, in theories, they can actually effectively measure properties of a network path or endpoint and look for unusual performance or behavior. Now, the project will start by training models using data gathered by SRI, as well as other existing projects that have gathered large amounts of data, including the TOR project and Censored Planet project at the University of Michigan. Now, the research, which aims to reliably discover internet censorship at scale in real time, develops critical capabilities for allowing citizens of the world to live in a free and open society. I, for one, hope they succeed. Well, folks, that does it for the blips. Next up, the bites. But before we get to the bites, we do have to thank a really great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's PlexTrack, the security management platform that brings you better reports, deeper assessments, and more insights. Now, let me ask you something. Do you spend hours and hours reporting security issues and feel like it's getting you nowhere? Think about that. How about, are you buried in data but still can't get a full picture of your security posture to prioritize remediation effort? Well, if the answer is yes, look no further, because the solution is here, PlexTrack. That's right. It will empower continuous assessment, automated workflow, and effective collaboration between teams to help cybersecurity professionals like yourself do more in less time. In fact, it will enable you to create assessment reports in half the time and centralize your remediation efforts across all scans, all your assessments and audits through powerful risk visualization, scanner and ticketing integrations, and enhanced analytics to effectively communicate risks in real time. Now, whether red or blue, there is PlexTrack for every security professional to save time and get the right work done. Now, here's what it can do for red teams. Import findings from numerous vulnerability scanners. It can also include screenshots, videos with auto formatting, create customized templates and export to Word with one click, streamline the report writing process to deliver better reports faster. Now listen what it can do for blue teams. Now you can customize internal and external assessment questionnaires, synchronize findings with task management tools like Jira Cloud, assign findings to team members and track status over time. And it can provide attestation of security posture with robust analytics. Now, whether you're a small to medium-sized security consultancy, a full-scale MSSP, or a large enterprise, security teams of all sizes and specialties will work more effectively and efficiently with PlexTrack. Now, PlexTrack is the premier cybersecurity workflow management and reporting platform for every professional from practitioner to CISO. Now, there's truly a PlexTrack for every security team. PlexTrack improves the entire security engagement lifecycle while making it easy to generate security reports, deliver those reports securely, and track the issues to completion straight from their platform. So go out right now and book a demo today. Try PlexTrack free for 1 month and see how it can change your life as a security professional. Simply go to PlexTrack.com/twit and claim your free month. That's PlexTrack.com/TWIT. And we thank PlexTrack for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's time for the News Bites. I love the Bites because it lets us go deep into recent enterprise and IT news and have a good conversation about it. Now, in the past, we've talked about supply chain hacks in length, especially in software. Now, in some cases, dependency chain hacks where software might depend on something down the tree of dependencies might actually have a vulnerability. Well, have you actually heard of dependency confusion attacks? It's an interesting one. Now, dependency confusion is a pesky software development problem as a malicious actor employ a variety of tricks to trick developers and integrators into incorporating malicious software components into their code base. Instead of getting the desired functionality in the application, developers wind up with an application that behaves differently than expected or one with a backdoor that can be exploited by unauthorized parties. Well, to help with this type of attack, there's actually a new toolkit out there. It's called Dependency Combobulator. I'm going to say that again. It's called Dependency Combobulator, an open source Python-based toolkit that actually gives organizations a way to safeguard against this kind of supply chain attack. Now, the Dependency Combobulator works with NPM, that's a JavaScript package repo, and Maven Java packages, package management out of the box, but it can also be extended to use other package management systems, according to the company. Now, earlier this year, security researchers Alex Bursan illustrated how easy it was to actually upload code components to public package managers and code repositories and actually trick developers into downloading them. It's actually scary how easy it is. Now, how was he able to actually exfiltrate data from companies here? He was actually able to use these exploits to exfiltrate data from Tesla, Apple, and Microsoft as part of this research. A month later, the Python package index removed 3,653 malicious packages, including an unauthorized version of QPy, a library for NVIDIA's parallel computing platform CUDA, and utilizing the same attack method. Now, let's talk about the exploit process here for dependency confusion attacks. It's actually fairly simple. As it begins, the malicious actor uploading a public repository, a piece of code to the public repository code, has the same name as maybe a private internal package. Now, the actor can discover the name of these private packages by looking through configuration files in those publicly available projects. Now, if a developer updates all the dependencies from a project and pulls from both private and public repos, the build process defaults to grabbing the malicious package from the public repository instead of the one from the private internal one. It's basically a bait and switch there. Questions are, is there other tools to help out with this process? Because obviously the Combobulator is one of them. Now, there's also Snyke, which offers sync and open source tool to actually detect potential instances of dependency confusion in the code repository. There's also Snyke also offers other processes there as well. Now, there are process improvements you can make as well to your organization. You can minimize this type of risk to supply chain attacks. Now, GitHub, which owns NPM, manages the public NPM registry and recommends the following to help with these dependency confusion tactics. In fact, one is using scopes for internal packages to explicit where the package lives, placing maybe an NPMRC file in the project's root to explicitly set the intended registry, and being careful when using proxies, as well as responding promptly to something that fails during your build process. Now, this is an interesting set of problems because it's a new problem. It's a new problem that's coming down the chain. Dependency attacks are, you know, obviously we've heard a lot about them. SolarWinds attack is one of them. And there's a lot of new tools coming to market to help with this. But the question is, are these tools good enough? I want to bring my co-host back in. Now, we've been in our soapbox before to talk about malware sneaking under the covers into these dependency chains. Do you feel like, Chivert, I want to throw this to you first. Do you feel like maybe it might be the job of these package repositories, these public ones that people depend on, like NPM, to essentially be doing the work to find out if there's these types of attacks available in them, or is it really the job of the organization that's utilizing them?
I think it needs to be both. I personally would love to see different types of packages where they will sign them, you know, digitally sign them. So I want to be able to know that if I'm doing an include, whether or not it matches the hash that's available from the source. So my question, I guess, I'm going to bounce it back to you, Lou, is from the Microsoft point of view, there's a whole bunch of modules that you can get from Microsoft compilers and Microsoft toolkits. Would requiring digital signatures on these modules, would that become way too cumbersome, or am I just doing a pie in the sky type of wish?
You know, digital signatures are interesting because you actually sign these files that you're importing. The key here is this type of attack is actually before that. So this is like you going in and pulling in code that might have been built with a vulnerability inside of it and then signed by the developer. And so that is a risk here. In fact, that's what the SolarWinds attack was. They were depending on a third-party application that had already been built and signed by that company and deployed to them into the side of the solution that had this back door inside of it. And so I think that is a challenge. Now, obviously, you should always be signing your application. You should always be using components signed by the developers that you use, you know, third-party developers. But in the case of, like, for instance, Python, or the case of, let's say, JavaScript, there's nothing to sign. because these files come in their raw format, and then you import them. And again, they could be exploiting things in the JavaScript runtime or in the browser. So these are a lot harder to detect because you have to scan the code and you have to do a bunch of things. And if there's things that are obfuscated inside them, or if there's things that, again, depend on other things down the road that they import from another third-party library, those can cause these dependency injection problems. And so, yeah, it's a challenge. And I do agree, signing things is important. But again, it's not going to be the end-all, be-all. Now, Curtis, I want to throw this to you because we've talked about this before. You know, obviously, dependencies are dependencies are dependencies. Do you feel like the enterprise is going to have to come up with some other solution here? Maybe stop using open source technology until we find a solution? Or do you feel like more tools and more solutions organizations have to come up with?
Well, let's be realistic. Enterprises are not going to stop using open source projects in their code. And the reasons are simple. They all boil down to money. The most expensive part of the development chain now is the time of the human beings involved. And the modern software development cycle that's put forward and practiced through things like SecOps means that we have to have releases on a really almost hurried scale. I mean, this is not rapid. This is relentless and very, very fast. The only way to do that is to make use of common bits and blocks that someone else has developed. And the only way to get those economically is, and sometimes at all, is through open source projects. There are technologies out there, there are products that say that they will go out and traverse the dependency tree and find all of the vulnerabilities that exist in the dependencies down to the nth level. But as much as I respect the people who develop those programs and services, the fact is that they're imperfect. And the open source projects themselves frequently change on a fairly rapid basis. So I think this is a business problem at its root. It's a business problem that is expressed through the software development process. But until the business leaders decide that they're willing to accept slower development cycles, slower release cycles, and more cost put into the projects by hiring more software developers to write their own code, we're going to see more of these security issues that come through the dependencies. There's just no real way around it.
Right, right. So, Jupiter, I want to throw this back to you for the last word here so we can get to the guests. But I think, you know, obviously Curtis brings up a good point. The baton is going to be passed to the organization here. The organization needs to figure this out. You've been in government. You've seen how they have security practices in there. We've talked a lot about how the government's trying to squeeze down and reduce cybersecurity threats, especially within the government. Do you feel like there's going to be some tooling? There's going to be some, additional things, services coming that are going to pop up that actually help with this? Because it may be even at a government level because of the fact that they are also at risk.
I think it's going to be a real interesting problem, only because from a budgeting standpoint, I've been seeing this back and forth. Do we spend money on our security or do we spend money on taking more time in our development? And you start ending up with which evil do I spend on? You know, which project, you know, how do I do this? And I don't think there's a good answer. You know, if I was in the position I used to be in the federal government, I would be pulling my hair out going, okay, I don't have an increased budget. You know, I keep asking for more money, but they're not giving it to me because that's just the way things go. I can't spend more money on getting more time to go and look at the dependencies and trace them back, because it all takes time. And I don't have a good answer. I keep hoping that there'll be some sort of tool that can go out and scan it. And, you know, maybe the combobulator is an answer or something like it. I sure would like it. Everybody's using open source to base things on because they don't want to have to pay royalties. I love that Microsoft hasn't gone and killed me on, you know, toolkits and so forth when I start using like Visual Studio. And with the number of problems coming out, I'm actually leaning more towards using commercial systems rather than open source, because what am I opening my customers to? What am I opening my clients to if I can't afford to track back 2, 3, 4 levels in dependencies? That's my biggest question, and I don't think there's an answer yet.
I agree. I think you guys are right. I think Curtis is right as well. It comes down to cost. We'll definitely have to see how the industry survives here and how they respond to all this. But you know what? I think it's time for us to get to the guests, because we have a really great guest to talk some tech with us today. But before we get to our guest, we do have to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that's Nareva. Nareva is some super cool technology that's going to help advance your meetings into the new norm. There are plenty of simple plug-and-play audio solutions for huddle rooms, but getting full room mic coverage in mid-size or large meeting and learning spaces has traditionally meant making a big leap into the complexity and high cost because you have to use pro AV solutions. But Nareva is changing all that by simplifying almost every aspect of audio conferencing. Now let's compare the two approaches to getting quality audio in larger spaces. Now, for purchase and installation for Pro AV systems for mid-size to large rooms involves multiple components, including mics and speakers installed in the ceiling or spread across the table, and lots of cables, a ton of them. Plus, you need specialized technicians to determine the required components to install and calibrate the system. Sometimes it takes days for installation. Plus, it costs tens of thousands of dollars per room for purchase and installation. Now, let's talk about Nareva Audio. It provides exceptional audio for a room up to 25 by 25 feet with one integrated microphone and speaker bar. Now, two bars cover a space up to 30 by 50 feet. Now, installs are as simple as a DIY project, and it only takes about 30 minutes to install each device on the wall with two screws and one cable, just one. And it costs a fraction of Pro AV systems. Now let's talk about mic coverage. For Pro AV systems, typically they use beamforming mic systems that provide good pickup within the beams, but there can be diminished pickup if a talker moves outside or faces away from the beams, and it needs to be recalibrated if you rearrange the room. Now, with Nareva's microphone mist technology, you can get true full room coverage so everyone is heard no matter where they move in the room or which way they face. Now, continuous auto calibration means your room is always ready for those meetings. Now, what about management software? Well, for Pro AV systems, managing Pro AV systems can be complicated, and you require training for your IT pros just to operate the software. Nareva Console is simple, intuitive platform that lets you easily monitor, manage, adjust, and scale your fleet of systems from anywhere. No training required. Now, the question is, which approach will you choose? Learn more at Nareva.com/twit. That's Nureva.com/twit. And we thank Nareva for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, it's my favorite part of the show. We actually get to bring in a guest to drop some knowledge on the Twiet Riot. And today we have Mike Fong. He's the founder and CEO of Provoro. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hi, Lou. Appreciate it. Excited to be here.
Yeah, we're excited for you to be here as well. And our audience loves to hear people's origin stories. You've had quite the journey in the security and startup world. Can you take us through a shortened version of that journey through tech and what brought you to Provoro?
Sure. So EE at Carnegie Mellon, went into the consulting world out of college. So voice data, video networking, and security. Spent a lot of time doing that. Started a company in that space, built it up over about 14 years to close to 700 people, sold it, ran a combined business for the acquirer for a while, then thought I would ride off into the sunset. But after a couple of years of doing consulting and things like that, I said, hey, I'm too young to not be more fully engaged. And so that was really the basis for starting Provora, which I can tell you more about in a minute.
Looking forward to it. Yeah. So there's a lot of problems going on in the industry today. A lot of security talk. We talk a lot about supply chain attacks and background software attacks. But there also is a big problem in mobile security, especially with the fact that there's trending with the remote workforce. What are you seeing, at least in the last year or two, due to the pandemic, with the remote workforce in mobile security? What's the challenges there?
Yeah, so I think, you know, the biggest thing is just an increased dependence on mobility. When, you know, people all came into the office and there was fixed infrastructure, suddenly we had to enable, you know, hundreds of millions of people to work from home. And so a lot of people already had mobile devices. You can do 80%+ of your compute for most people, office automation type stuff, on a mobile device, be it phone or tablet. And, you know, IT orgs were trying to figure out how to empower that. And our initial market is the government. There's a lot of very unique concerns and additional requirements about how they tried to manage that, because they're trying to figure out how can they have access to sensitive information from a distributed environment. But that's the big trend. I think it's just an ever-growing increase on the importance and need for mobility.
So I read this great article you guys wrote, and it talks about the kind of the road ahead for mobile security. And there's four or five trends in there. I'm going to go through them a little bit, because I want to talk a little bit about how this kind of applies to maybe how organizations can problem solve here, provide solutions. Like, number one was continuous authentication via smartphone will emerge as a viable option. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean that they will use their phone to authenticate them, like an MFA type thing?
Yeah, it is. And by the way, Lou, you know, it's November, and this is always a tough one. You know, people ask for predictions for the upcoming year, but rarely do they go back and grade themselves. So I was actually looking at this. I'm thankful. I wouldn't give us an A, but at least I'd put us at a B. But quickly, to your point, yeah, I think the reality is both Apple and Google have announced that they are focused on a passwordless future, and they want to leverage the security they've built in the smartphone and the fact that everybody carries it to try to provide additional authentication. And so whether it's, I think Apple said, you know, passwordless, like WebAuthn integrated, mm-hmm. you know, leverage the key store in iCloud. So across devices, you'll have, you know, sort of private public key pairs stored there. There's lots of examples, but you're already seeing a push to move authenticators into the phone.
Right. And the trend number two, again, I would give you a grade, maybe B+. This is actually a really great list. Number two being smartphones will rely heavily for COVID-19 compliance. Now, do you feel like we got there? Do you feel like there's the device makers helping here?
So, third rail of talking about COVID, what I will say is that I think it's much more prevalent internationally. I know when you travel, a lot of places require you to download an app so they can do contact tracing. Right. And, I know, some of the folks in our company, and they've got their COVID vaccine. It's in an app. So they're using it to, not carry the actual physical card. So to me, it's a mixed bag. The reality is COVID's evolved quite quickly. I think it's staggering how quickly we got vaccines out. And so, I'm a harsh grader. So I'd put us at a B- on this one. But, clearly in some parts of the world, they're definitely using cell phones as part of their COVID response approach.
Now the next trend gets into an interesting one, and the fact that smartphones will national security community will be heavily targeted with attacks here. And this gets a little bit into what you're doing, right?
Yeah. So I think, this is an interesting one, in that this is sort of the hidden cyber war that's going on continuously between nation states. And just on the commercial side, there was a ton of coverage earlier in the year on Pegasus, 50,000 potential targets. And of course, they're one of multiple companies that developed this type of commercial malware for mobile phones. And a couple of those were just banned last week or sanctioned by the US government. And of course, every major nation state, I think, has been leaked. So I think it's safe to say that, for obvious reasons, phones are now the primary compute device on the planet. So there's an enormous incentive to target those devices. And, the big countries that have their own capabilities are not going to leverage a commercial software package like NSO, Russia, China, the United States. They're going to develop their own exploits. They have those capabilities. So I think we're seeing a lot of that. I think just yesterday we heard about Phone Spy, if you're tracking that. It's another sort of similar Pegasus type of thing for Android. So I feel pretty darn good about that prediction. I think that's our A. We're definitely seeing that continue.
Now, I do want to bring my co-host back in because, again, they have a lot of experience in the industry. And I'm going to bring Cheebert back in here because, again, Cheebert used to work with the government. He knows a lot about how these types of attacks have come through. Cheebert?
I was just saying, you know, I used to actually carry a Motorola flip phone that had a special sled so that I could actually encrypt voice communication so that I could communicate in the field. It was an interesting thing. You know, it was not small, I'll tell you that. And the batteries didn't last very long. But it was just the way we had to do business because there's a lot of people that wanted to find out what the heck we're doing, even though all I was doing was logistics. Now, there's been talk of all kinds of places about secure voice, secure data in a mobile environment. And one of the things that starts, you know, nitpicking in the back of my mind is the world of industrial espionage or, you know, the private sector, is it really bad enough that we need these devices? You know, I obviously, when I was dealing in the in classified stuff, yeah, it makes sense. But has business really become that nasty that we need to start doing encryption? You know, so Mike, help me out here. Is there a market in the private?
It's a great question. What I will tell you is clearly in the government, they've banned phones and they're banning them around the world from sensitive and classified areas because of the espionage risk provided by the devices. So that's a pretty darn big market. And we're initially focused on that and we're getting lots of traction. You can probably see some of the announcements on our website and, you know, we'll have more down the road. You're 100% right about the size of the prior sleds. The great news is that we just keep driving the form factors down. So Ant Pruitt, who I on your team, who I met with, you know, several years ago, he saw our first product, which was really something only a mother could love. It was like a weapon. It was so big and heavy. You've seen some pictures on the website of the safe case. And I think I can preview where we're headed. This will be a product that's coming out here in Q1. It's super thin, super sleek. So like any technology curve, you drive the form factor down and the capabilities grow. So those are the types of things that open up the market to others. And then the other key is features. So the first thing that we did was this anti-surveillance capability to prevent the phone from being used for espionage, even if it was undetectably owned by an adversary. But there's a pretty robust roadmap because we've got a very high functional platform now next to the mobile phone. And on that roadmap are things that I think you'll see enterprises become very interested in.
Let me go a little further then. On my government phone, if it looked like someone was going to obtain my encrypted phone, I had a nice easy way to destroy my keys so that the I don't lose the keys to the kingdom, so to speak. You know, what kinds of, you know, do you have such things built in so that the physical device doesn't open up the world to your competitors or the bad guys?
Yeah. So, Brian, it's been an extraordinary journey with the U.S. government. I feel like we've had more rubber glove exams from very sensitive agencies on our technology. It literally starts with what you guys were talking about earlier, which is our supply chain. The supply chain security, Brian, is that, you know, once we provision the chip and we have the private key, you know, sort of on the chip, we disable all the JTAG and debug pins. You literally would have to delaminate the chip to extract the private key. We've got a lot of side channel protections. The physical case housing is tamper resistant. And then we're right now going through the FIPS 140-3 level 2 overall level 3 physical security certification for our crypto stuff, which, yeah, it's a very high bar, but that's what will allow us down the road to be a NIST AL3 authenticator. It's been quite the journey to go from the ground level up to build the security architecture such that, you know, without at the risk of doing government acronym soup, just a couple of months ago, we became the first ever device that was NTSWG certified, National Telecommunications Security Working Group. And that's what allows a, you know, a phone to be brought into a sensitive secret space in the U.S. government. And that was a multi-year journey. So the, you know, we could spend a whole show just talking about the security architecture and the things that we've had to do to build our product. But I know we can't do that today.
Yeah. But you know, Kurt's got some questions and he's going to be asking stuff more from the C-suite view of the world. Right.
Well, before we get to Kurt, we do want to do one more thing. We want to thank another great sponsor of This Week in Enterprise Tech, and that is Bitwarden. Bitwarden is the only open source cross-platform password manager that can be used at home, at work, or on the go, and is trusted by millions. Now, empower your employees to follow password management best practices. With Bitwarden, you can actually securely store credentials across personal and business worlds. In fact, every Bitwarden account begins with the creation of a personal vault. Now, use Bitwarden for your business. It's fully customizable. Adjust features using enterprise policies to adapt to your business needs. Also, use Bitwarden Send, a fully encrypted method to transmit sensitive information, whether text or files, directly to anyone. Also, team members can generate unique and secure passwords for every site. And you'll get enterprise-grade security and their GDPR, CCPA, HIPAA, and SOC 2 compliant. Now, their end-to-end encrypted vault helps mitigate phishing attacks by storing passwords and much, much more. Now, Bitwarden now has new releases you don't want to miss. It includes dark mode for the web vault, a fan favorite for those who like system-wide dark mode themes. Also, new policies such as a vault timeout policy, and allows an admin to set the maximum vault timeout duration for all members of the organization. Now, if you're interested in a business plan, that's great, because Bitwarden has plans that will work for you. Their Teams organization option is $3 a month per user, where you can share private data securely with your coworkers, department, or entire organization. They also have Bitwarden's enterprise organization plan for just $5 a month per user. Now, their free organization plan includes two users who can store and share secure passwords. Bitwarden's now accepting free registration to their second annual open source security summit, featuring keynote speakers Nicole Perloff, Steve Wozniak, and Bruce Schneider. Explore the advancements in open source security and empowering individuals and businesses with credential management. This year, they will bring together users, business leaders, and industry visionaries to chart a path to bring open source security solutions to the world at this free and virtual event. Bitwarden believes that everyone should have access to basic security, basic password security tools. Individuals can use their basic free account forever for an unlimited number of passwords, or upgrade anytime to their premium account for less than $1 a month. And if you're looking for secure password storage for your entire family, that's great, because their family organization option gives up to six users premium features for only $3.33 a month. Using the Bitwarden Cloud, you can get started in no time. Monitor and manage security vulnerabilities using the Bitwarden Vault Health Reports. Identify exposed, reused, weak, or potentially compromised passwords, as well as any items in your vault with inactive 2FA. Get started with a free Teams or Enterprise trial of a Teams or Enterprise plan at bitwarden.com/twit, or try it for free across devices as an individual user. That's bitwarden.com/twit. And we thank Bitwarden for their support of This Week in Enterprise Tech. Well, folks, we've been talking with Mike Fong. He's the founder and CEO of Provoro, really, really interesting company that's been building out these amazing first-of-its-kind mobile security hardware for prevent attacks. Now, I do want to bring my co-host back in, back over to Curtis here, because, again, he's been in the security world for a while and the enterprise world for a while, and he has some questions.
Now, one of my big questions involves who is protected with this device. I mean, if you've got an organization of 5,000 or 10,000 users, is this the sort of solution that would apply to every particular mobile device? Or is this something that is much more likely to be deployed when it comes to high value employees or employees in high value operations?
Yeah, great question, Curtis. I think it varies by segment. If you go to the government, it's a much bigger use case. Anybody who wants to bring their phone into a secure facility, it's critical. And so that's why all of our devices are, you know, fleet managed. There's a SaaS cloud offering. You can set policies and geofences. And, you know, if someone exposes a camera or mic in a secure space, there can be alerting. There's MDM integrations, you know, all the enterprise stuff that you need to have to manage tens of thousands of devices and fleets. And it all operates in, for example, right now, AWS GovCloud. On the enterprise side, it's much more narrow at this stage. And it's exactly what you described. It wouldn't be for everybody. It would be people who deal with sensitive or confidential information. It could be, you know, IP related, R&D, legal, executive suite, financial information. You know, those types of folks would probably be the initial group, as well as international travel. A lot of organizations already are using burner devices for good reason when they go overseas. And, you know, this is another area that we can provide protection.
Very good. I have a feeling that a lot of companies don't give enough thought to precisely who they're going to protect when it comes to security. The initial impulse is just to protect everyone equally. And as we know, that can be an awfully expensive way of looking at security. Now, the next thing I want to look at is, you know, are we in fact looking at mobile devices as a massively increased security problem because of the pandemic and working from home? I know that a lot of people were saying that they were an enhanced platform for attacks even before all this. I mean, has the pandemic been that much of a game changer, or did it just perhaps accelerate a path that we were already on?
Curtis, my take is it accelerated the path that we're already on. So if you look at the Verizon Mobile Threat Index, they publish this every year. They survey quite a few people. I think 60% of the people who the respondents said that they view mobile devices as like the primary threat right now. And 85% said that they believe that mobile devices have, you know, similar level of vulnerability as other IT infrastructure. And you're only going to see us become more dependent on them. People don't want to come back in the office full time. We hear it almost every day. And as the mobile devices become increasingly powerful, more and more of what you want to do from a compute perspective is going to be on the mobile device. The R&D dollars spent on them is huge. The younger generation grows up with these things surgically attached to their hands. So, you know, I really like where we're at, having a very differentiated position in mobile security. And I think, you know, I'd love the chance to come back in 12 months and reveal some of the things that are in our roadmap that will expand the functionality beyond the very sensitive government customers.
Thank you, Mike. Now, some of the interesting things here, obviously we talked about some of the stuff that you've come out with, but we haven't talked about some of the stuff that might be coming down the pipe. Can you maybe give us a little bit of that crystal ball, that ability to look into the future around some of the things that we might need to protect from, maybe something with voice?
Yeah, so it's really interesting. So one is, I'd say, zoom out for a second, and there's a couple of macro trends that we look at when we think about positioning the company. So number one is that our view is security is fundamentally broken. There's a combination of reasons for it, but largely it's the extraordinary size of the attack surface. And then if you think about all the layers, you know, very simplistically, apps on top of operating system, on top of firmware, on top of chips, every layer is attacked, endless cat and mouse game. Every industry has become a technology industry. And those are the things that drive zero trust. People are accepting the fact it's hard to keep people out. So find them fast, continuously authenticate, you know, prevent lateral movement. And this whole thing is made worse by what you guys talked about earlier. The pace of change on that massive attack surface is high, driven by the need to, you know, ever, you know, always roll out new features at lower cost. And so until you can architecturally change that game, we're going to have, I think, a repeat of what we've experienced. There's literally thousands and thousands of security companies. And the way to change this game architecturally is you have to start in hardware, because one thing's certain is that hard as it is to win the cat and mouse game at every layer, if someone attacks at a lower layer, they can bypass protections at the higher layer. So you have to create these foundations of trust in hardware at different points, different control points in our overall IT infrastructure, We're doing it at the edge. So imagine now for a second that, you know, with that backdrop, sort of big pillar number sort of one and two, combine that with data collection. So data is at the heart of the business models for the biggest companies in the world, is at the heart of machine learning. So the collection of data is not going to end. The incentives are too powerful. So at the intersection of these things, you realize, okay, mobile devices are going to be designed to collect information because there's a lot of value in that. How do you as an individual, or if you're responsible for an enterprise or a government, you know, manage all of that? And we're aimed at giving people control over their data from a trusted device paired with the commercial device that you're going to be purchasing. And that sort of informs our roadmap. You know, if you're a consumer, you have to worry about natural language processing is advancing at a high rate. We're all going to want to talk to our devices, not use our thumbs. That's great. But what if you're saying something sensitive to your spouse or your kids? You know, how do you control that? And so those are the things that are going to inform our roadmap, including things like you mentioned. How do you know? What about the security of your voice calls, the data at rest on your device, those types of areas?
Now, the interesting thing, I've actually seen this with consumer devices. A lot of, for instance, a lot of the voice assistants, the unnamed devices that are around our room here, we've seen some consumer devices actually come out that will actually effectively wrap these devices and do something similar where they won't actually allow the assistant to hear you unless you really want them to hear them. In fact, to let you change voice and do other things. Do you see this type of device that, you've talked about even coming down to the consumer level as well?
I think so. You know, we've done a lot of quantitative market research and polled a large number of consumers about what they care about. And it really is amazing. People, despite the fact that they share a ton of information about themselves, they actually care about privacy. All things being equal, they'd prefer to control their data. And there's a lot of research to back that up. So, so I think the key, though, is you have to do this in a way that's frictionless. If there's any friction, size, weight, cost, the consumer market is not going to be very good to you. And the only way to do that is you have to get to scale, and you have to have the ability to, you know, do these things at a price point that makes sense for the consumer. So our goal is, as we advance, we're starting with sort of the most sensitive and targeted organizations in the world. We provide the protection that meets their standards, and then we'll keep going downstream to larger TAM markets, leveraging the high-end capabilities that we've built. And maybe, you know, the consumer doesn't need the same thing that a three-letter agency needs, but we can base it on the same type of technology.
Really interesting stuff. Thank you, Mike. Well, unfortunately, all good things come to an end. Thank you so much for being here, Mike. We're running a little low on time, but we did want to give you a chance to tell the folks at home where they can learn more about your organization and maybe get started with Provoro.
Sure. It's just our website. It's a great spot, www.provoro.com. There's lots of content on there. There's white papers. You can start to learn how we think about the mobile security marketplace, security architecture, and we'd love to have you visit the site.
Thanks again, Mike. Well, folks, you've done it again. You've sat through another hour of the best enterprise podcast in the universe. So definitely tune your podcatcher to Twiat. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to my co-host, my very busy co-host. Sorry, the very own Mr. Brian Chee. Cheebert, what's going on for you in the coming weeks and this weekend? How can people get a hold of you?
Find me at Maker Faire. I'm going to be there pretty much living at the Central Florida Fairgrounds this weekend. And then, you know, it's teardown. Oh, it's never long enough. You keep playing. You see all this really cool stuff. I want to see robot rockets. I want to see the power racers. And, oh, I wish I had more time. But, you know, I want to hear from you. There's all kinds of stuff. You know, I've been talking to Doug M. in the chat room about that app I've been playing with, Speedify. And he was asking about that computer that I hauled up that I'm going to use for that. Anyway, you can hit me on Twitter, and I'm ADVNETLAB, Advanced Net Lab on Twitter. I'm also Cheebert, spelled Cheebert at twit.tv, but you're also welcome to hit Twiat at twit.tv, and that'll hit all the hosts. I do the booking, So PR people, if you're going to be sending pitches, send them to me and I'll share it with the rest of the hosts and we can talk about seeing about get you on the show. Lots of fun. Mike, it's been awesome. I really enjoyed this. And boy, did I get a bunch of flashbacks, especially pre-show when we were talking about all the things that we've done in common. Lots of fun. Anyway, to our viewers, love to hear from you. Take care. Stay safe.
Thanks, Chiebert. Well, we also have to thank our very own Mr. Curtis Franklin. Curtis, what's going on for you the coming weeks, and where can people find you and all your work?
Well, I'll also be at the Central Florida Fairgrounds this weekend. Looking forward to a weekend full of fun. After that, next week, I've got a live dark reading event on Wednesday. Same day, I have a webinar that I'm participating in. And then get to take a few days away from the desk, getting into the Thanksgiving holiday. Looking forward to that. If people want to follow me, they can do so on Twitter. I'm at KG4GWA. And if they want to see what's going on with the Maker Faire and the Urban Sketchers, follow me on Instagram. I'm Kurt_Franklin over there.
Thank you, Curtis. Well, folks, we also have to thank you as well. You're the person who drops in each and every week to watch and to listen to our show to get your enterprise goodness. We want to make it easy for you to get that enterprise and IT news. So go to our show page right now, twit.tv/Twyatt. There you will find all the amazing back episodes, the co-host information, notes, guest information, of course, the links that we do during the show as well. But more importantly, next to those videos, you'll get those helpful subscribe and download links. Definitely support the show by getting your audio version of your video version of your choice and listen on any one of your devices or any one of your podcast applications. We're on all of them. So definitely subscribe and support our show. Plus, you may have also heard, we talk about it a lot and we love it. It's Club Twit. It's a members only ad free podcast service with a bonus Twit Plus feed that you can't get anywhere else. And it's only $7 a month. And you can, it's one of my favorite things about that is not only the Twit Plus feed, a lot of cool and unique information coming through there, but also the members only Discord channel. It's a exclusive channel. You can go in there and chat, talk about different things. There's different topics. Every show has a channel. There's gaming on there. There's talk about different tech. It's really great. Just be part of that. Be part of that interesting conversation. Join Club Twit right now. Go to twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, Club Twit now offers corporate group plans as well. That's right. It's a great way to give your team access to our ad-free tech podcast. The plans start with 5 members at a discounted rate of $6 each per month, and you can add as many seats as you like. It's a really great way for your IT department, your developers, your Salesforce, your tech teams to stay up to date with access to all of our podcasts. And it's just like regular memberships. They can join the Twit Discord server and get the Twit Plus bonus feed as well. So join that at twit.tv/Club Twit. Now, after you subscribe, you know, impress your family members, your coworkers, and your friends with the gift of Twyatt, because we talk about a lot of interesting tech topics, especially this show, about tech topics on the show. And we think they'll find it interesting and fun as well. So definitely share it with them and have them subscribe. Now, if you have already subscribed and you want to watch the show live, we do it live, 1:30 p.m. Pacific time on Fridays at live.twit.tv. That's right. Come see how the pizza's made, the behind the scenes, all the banter that we do here on Twit, and have fun. Definitely check it out at live.twit.tv. And of course, if you watch the show live, you got to jump into the amazing chat room as well, irc.twit.tv. Some amazing characters in there. It's been around for a long time, and we have some great conversations, back channel conversations in there, and get some good topics and questions for the show. So definitely check that out at irc.twit.tv. Definitely hit me up at twitter.com/LouMM. I post all my enterprise tidbits there. You can direct message me for show ideas. In fact, Hank Bellamy, he sent me a message just recently about a great show about from Riviera Group about the Eagle 6 software. We definitely might get them on that show. So we'll have to check that out and see if we can get them on there. So definitely thank you, Hank, for reaching out. Plus, I also have some great conversations with people like you, especially about my normal work week at Microsoft. So also, if you want to check that out, that's right. I have some great conversations with Ant as well, even though we talk over email and chat as well. Of course, if you want to check out what I do at Microsoft, go to developers.microsoft.com/office. There we post all the latest and greatest ways for you to customize your Office solutions to make it work for you and be more productive. And this is across the board. I'm talking about even the old days of Access. We have some new solutions out there to help you maybe even integrate to Dataverse and Power Apps out there. We have Office Script, some really great announcements out there about Office add-ins and JavaScript add-ins out there. So definitely check all that out. We do some amazing things. I want to thank everyone who makes this show possible, especially to Leo and Lisa. They continue to support This Week in Enterprise Tech each and every week, and we couldn't do the show without them. So thank you, Leah and Lisa, for all the support over the years. Of course, I want to thank all the staff at Twit and all the engineers. And I also want to thank Mr. Brian Chi one more time. He's not only our co-host, but he's also our tireless producer. He does all the bookings and the plannings for the show. So thank you. We couldn't do this show without him. So thank you, Chibert, for all your support. And of course, before we sign out, we have to thank the man behind the editor, Mr. Victor B. He makes us look good after the fact. And of course, the guy who makes us look good live as our TD today, he's the talented Mr. Ant Pruitt, and he has a fabulous show called Hands On Photography. Ant, what's going on for you in this coming week, and what's going on Hands On Photography?
Well, Mr. Liu, I had the honor and pleasure of sitting down with Mr. Tiber Jefferson. He's a Canon Explorer of Light, and he got to play with the latest Canon camera at the Olympics this year. And he's an amazing skateboard photographer. I got to tell you, taking photos of people on skateboards is a lot harder than one may think, sir.
Very cool. Very cool. Definitely check that out. I love that. Love that. Motion photography is not easy, so that's a really great skill to have.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Ant. He knows it. Awesome. Awesome. Well, thanks again. And until next time, I'm Louis Maresca, just reminding you, if you want to know what's going on in the enterprise, just keep quiet.
Do you have an iPhone, an Apple Watch, an iPad, or any number of Apple devices? Well, you have got to check out iOS Today with me, Micah Sargent, and Rosemary Orchard. We cover all things iOS and help you get the most out of your devices.